The TSW Roundtable is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Follow at SW Commonwealth on Twitter and take your first steps into a larger world.
Hello there.
You want the bad news?
Roger, roger.
The Force, it's calling to you.
This is not going to go the way you think.
Now you will experience the full power of the dark side.
That's not how the Force works.
I need someone to show me my place in all this.
This is madness.
Let the past die. Kill it.
It's a trap!
Fulfill your destiny.
No!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the TSW Roundtable. I am your host, Robert Cass, and we are continuing our spotlight feature. Today, my very special guest is Tim from the Nerd Room. Say hi to everybody, Tim.
What's going on, everyone? Pleasure to be here.
And okay, now, in all fairness, people might be going, Rob, are you literally interviewing your co-host for TSW Comics? Yes.
Yep.
But we're not recording TSW Comics today. And for a little quick peek behind the curtain, Tim graciously produces the TSW comic show. It's one thing to record a show. It's a completely other thing to edit, put the music in, get it online, get it to Talk Star Wars headquarters over in the UK.
The Admiral
to our good friend Rob Wade. So, but TSW Roundtable, this is my little kind of baby in our little Commonwealth. So this, or I'm like a cousin something. I slipped my way into the Commonwealth, and this is my inn. So here we are. So Tim, the Nerd Room.
Yes.
First of all, I'm going to start these spotlight series. I should start them all the same and ask. Describe your show.
Well, it's a weekly show, the Nerd Room podcast. Every Thursday we drop an episode, and the key focus of it is Star Wars, Marvel, and DC. And basically what we do is we sit around with my co-hosts Troy and Sanjay, two of my good friends from here in Calgary, and we discuss everything from those three universes that we love. So we do movie reviews, we break down comic books, we talk about everything that's dropping as far as set leaks and theories, and we just kind of go at it once a week, about an hour and a half, and try to just pour through the weekend nerd.
And of course I'm biased, but it is a great show. I listen. It's appointment listening, as we say here in the Commonwealth. But you have a huge umbrella over all things nerd, but you really lean heavily on the Star Wars, obviously, and that's how you are in the Star Wars Commonwealth. So I'm going to ask you, why Star Wars? Why is this the thing?
You know, it's having listened to your episode with Ash last week, and you asked a very similar question. I had a bit of time to think about that. And, you know, in the past on different podcasts, I've expressed that Star Wars for me has been almost a lifelong thing. I kind of grew up in that era between the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. And so I found myself being introduced originally to Star Wars via collecting. I remember going to, I guess it was Zeller's at the time, no longer exists here in Canada, and seeing the Power of the Force 2 figures swinging from the pegs and thinking, wow, you know, I love Ninja Turtles, I love Jurassic Park and all that when it came out. And this kind of going into that late 90s when we had the release of the special editions coming out, the Power of the Force 2 had hit hard only a couple years prior to that. We're starting to see some indications of the Phantom Menace figures arriving on the pegs. And for me, I just got embroiled in this idea that there's this whole universe somewhere. I don't know what it is, but it looks awesome. These guys are holding lightsabers. You've got Vader. You've got these little droids. That really drew me in. And then going back and with my dad taking me to the special editions in 97, really getting that first experience. Actually, I think the first experience I had was with that blue, purple, and darker purple set of VHS tapes.
Right. Yeah.
But I had bought figures prior to even seeing the films because they were just all over the place, and I had to get into this universe. And that's one of the things that keeps me in the universe is collecting. I'm a huge collector of Star Wars and Marvel as well, but Star Wars has always held a special place, you know, whether it's the vintage, going back to the actual vintage, and the Black Series today. So I kind of cover this massive spectrum of Star Wars collecting.
Yeah, absolutely. And also too, you're mentioning you're in kind of a weird generation, because you're about 10 years my junior. And when I was talking with Ash on the last Spotlight, we were able to compare my experience as a young child growing up with the OT to her experience growing up with the prequel. Now you're kind of in between there. So you were best time for being exposed to Star Wars happened in the dark times.
Yes.
Like you said, so it's collecting, and I hear a lot of people your age getting, oh, I got in with the Timothy Zahn trilogy. And I'm like, oh, wow. That's excellent. But no matter what it is, there always seems to be a window to hop into Star Wars.
Yeah. And like with the Zahn trilogy, I think that came out in 91. So I was only 6.
Yeah.
And then the prequels dropped and I was 14, I believe. And so I teetered on that edge too of being a little too old, a little too cool for Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so my time was really that 93, 94 when I think the VHSs were dropping to about 99. And then it slowly kind of faded for a while as I moved into high school and then the early part of university and that.
Well, yeah, of course, at that time in your life too, especially university, I remember people talking to me about, you know, I'm a huge sci-fi fan. You mean, obviously we do these Star Wars podcasts, and of course I love, you know, Trek and all this other stuff. And I get asked a lot, it's like, oh, you never watched the X-Files? I'm like, well, no, because X-Files were on at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night on a Friday when I was in my 20s. And at 9, 10 o'clock at night in your 20s, you're probably not sitting at home. Well, you hope you're not sitting at home.
it wasn't a PVR.
Yeah, exactly. There was no PVR. I wasn't setting a VCR because you're distracted by so many other things. So it's again, my curiosity and just my amazement of how, wow, collecting hooked you. But I guess you have that collecting bug.
Yeah, and it's a family thing too. Like my dad's a collector, my uncle, my cousin. Like it's something in my family that is just passed down. Everyone has a different focus. My uncle's a big Rolling Stones and sports collector. My cousin's a sports collector and Funko Pop. My dad does a lot of kind of Western. He's got Western comics. And so it's almost I saw this and I was like, I need my own thing. And I found my own thing. And my dad wasn't super into Star Wars, but he allowed me or provided me an outlet for it. He took me to the store to buy figures. He watched the films, even though he's not a sci-fi guy by any means, but he's also the first one that bought me the vintage collection, like the proper vintage collection from 77 through 83 or 84 there.
Oh, nice.
He bought me, my uncle had on a wall in his house, he had that vintage Vader carrying case.
Right.
And I saw it one Christmas or Thanksgiving and I was like, this is incredible. I need this. I'd never really seen the proper vintage in person before.
You might notice back over my shoulder, I got a Vader case.
Yeah, I still got. So that it must have been Thanksgiving, because that Christmas, my dad bought me a vintage Vader carrying case with a whole bunch of figures in it. And so him not being a collector of Star Wars or even in that universe, he was the one that said, here, I know you love this stuff. Here it is. And that again, that really reinvigorated. That was when I was in, I believe, my second year of university. And that was when my Star Wars fandom just skyrocketed again. I was like, I need to be in this. I need to be collecting. That was the first time I went to eBay for collecting. It was the first time I went to other outlets for collecting, to shows and all that. So that really kicked it off again for me.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, and we won't get into the eBay collecting. Entire separate series on that. So on how to tread lightly and be careful. Okay, this is what I'm interested in. When I collect Star Wars, or I'm in my office or my quote unquote nerd room, we call it the Flannel Beaver Studios here in Ontario, and I have wall space in here, but I don't want it creeping out to my rec room, because you know, if you collect and you start hanging a few pictures in your rec room, all of a sudden you got another room to plaster,
yeah,
shelves to fill. So I try to keep it contained in my office. If I'm going to buy a new poster or a new something, it has to take something down off the wall. So it's got to be top quality, because I got autographs from William Shatner, Peter Mayhew. I got my canvas Empire Strikes Back poster. I got animation cells. So it's got to be fantastic to to replace it, because I've just cut myself off, because we can go crazy. You know,
it can
get way out of hand. So whenever I buy wall art, it has to be great because it's taken something really awesome off my wall. And I collect vintage. I have the entire run of the Star Wars, the first run in 77, including Boba Fett and a few Empire figures, but that's just for my nostalgia. And I got that in a little display case in my office. I collect the Burger King glasses, you know, the little tumblers you used to get. I have all 12 from the original
Brilliant.
OG series, except for me, I remember waking up Saturday morning and watching cartoons and having my milk in my Lando glass. So it's all nostalgia.
It is.
What I want to ask you, when you're buying new stuff, I do buy new stuff, but it has to be, I bought the Afro figures from San Diego Comic-Con. It has to be exclusive or something really niche, because for me, it's almost like I'm collecting something, but they can literally make more. They can't make any more Star Wars 77 figures, the original. Like there's only so many out there.
Yeah.
They can reprint them. Or they can reproduce them, but you can't get the originals. There's only so many out there on the planet, and that's it. So that's the allure and the nostalgia. So what brings you to something new? Because, you know, they can just make a new run tomorrow and be like, hey, here's this new Marvel run. Here's this new Star Wars run. They could name it anything, and now you're kind of roped into collecting that. Like, what's the draw to new?
You know, collecting in itself is a bit of a fickle beast. It's one of those things that for me, it heavily ebbs and flows as far as the degree I'm into something new. I agree that going back and collecting the nostalgic piece, like the vintage collection, I say the vintage collection, but that's something new right now. So that's hard. So the 77 vintage stuff, but the for me, the allure of the new stuff is really the thrill of the hunt. You know, we talk about that a lot on the podcast, is, you know, going out there and grinding away and trying to find these figures. It's frustrating and it's rewarding. It's a double-edged sword on this. But when I look at the collections that are coming out right now, you know, Black Series is a huge focus of mine. Marvel Legends are a huge focus of mine. I love the sculpts. I love the way they look. The Black Series in box is fantastic. It visits every era of Star Wars. And just going and getting something new, I don't know what it is. It's going into the store for something very specific, and you find a rack of brand new Black Series, and your heart starts pounding. I call it plastic anxiety, actually. It's something that, you know, you go in, you're trembling, and you just find it. It's just, to me, it's that draw of the hunt that really brings me to the recent stuff, and also how well it's done. Like I said, with ebbing and flowing in my collecting, in 2015, when The Force Awakens hit, I was all in on everything. And then slowly since then, it's really dwindled, and I've really tried to focus. Because like you said, space is really a commodity when you have a room. You don't want it bleeding out, and you don't want it to look like a cluttery mess. So for me and what I do, I rotate a lot of my collection in and out. So if I get a Black Series run that I really like, I'll put that up. If I want to replace it with something, I have to take something down. So I've got Rogue One, The Force Awakens, and the original orange cardback Black Series. That's what's displayed right now in my room. I've got a row of Marvel Legends up behind me on the screen. You guys can't see this, but they're out of box.
They're there. I see them.
So for me, I do the same thing. It's give and take. Pieces come in, pieces go out. They're stored properly. And then every so often, I like to rotate, change it up. I just went through a bit of a phase of rotating out my nerd room so that I have something new to look at, something different. It's not always a constant, you know, as far as the room setup, it has to change and evolve for me. And some of that comes with the addition of new pieces. I like to this idea of a continuum of collecting, because this keeps me connected to the universe along with podcasting and the Star Wars Commonwealth. But it's a big piece for me. It's something that I like to do. So it's more or less my hobby, my pastime that is collecting. So that's why I'm doing a lot of this, going out and doing the hunt and grabbing new things, Elite Series or whatever. And more recently, I like just going out and looking and seeing what's there. And I was at the Disney store yesterday and I saw the new Elite Series stuff. I didn't pick any of it up. I put it on a list for my wife for Christmas and the holidays and that. But it's not right now. It's not all about just grabbing anything I can get my hands on.
Yeah, and because it sounds like you have like you're running like the Nerd Room Museum, and yes. and for these next 3 months you're gonna have the Marvel collection, and then the next 3 months you're gonna have the Black Series Star Wars. Like it's almost
much
every time you visit Tim's house you're gonna see something new. As long as you don't go every day, please don't. And we'll give the address out later. No, we won't do that.
It comes.
Yeah, no, we don't do it. So yeah, but that makes sense, because what I didn't get with new stuff is like, I hear you mean you and Kyle from Tumbling Saber and Corey, you guys are collecting all this stuff, and it's like, it's just a shame if it goes into a box, because I can see the appeal of collecting something if it looks great and it's what you're really into. Don't get me wrong, I have nothing against buying something new. It just, if it's going in a box, it's like, oh, well, how heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, some people have plans on, I want to have a man cave in my man cave, instead of having, if you walk down, especially in Ontario here, if you walk down to somebody's rec room and it was plastered with Maple Leafs, Toronto Maple Leafs hockey paraphernalia, nobody would bat an eye. It's a little cheesy, but you mean, we see it everywhere. I mean, I'm sure you see a lot of football rooms in the States or baseball, whatever you're into. Your rec room might be dedicated to that or your favorite team or something. So I can understand if people having plans of, I don't personally do that to my family room or rec room, but hey, there's lots of people out there. My man cave is going to have Star Wars or Star Trek or something. Then yes, I totally see these Black Series figures. Some of them are just amazing.
Yep.
And it's almost like I mentioned, like a museum like quality, where you're like, wow, this is fantastic. I've seen a lot of guys, quote unquote, nerd rooms, and it's like, oh, just blow your mind.
Yeah, well, it's funny because the reaction I get when people walk into this, I'm very hesitant at times. There's only certain people I'll bring down here, because not that I'm afraid of a reaction, but I don't want to overwhelm anyone. So I get everything from, oh my God, what are you doing with your life, to this is amazing. So people appreciate it differently. And like you said, there's the idea of, it's okay to have a sports room, it's okay to have this room. But to me, this is my room. This is where I'm comfortable. You know, Troy and Sanjay are down here every day, or every day, once a week at least. And it's about having something to talk about. It's like you said, it's a museum. I feel like I'm a curator at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, with everything that's on my walls, including the stuff that you've got me at various cons, I love having a story behind my collecting as well. So I can point at most things in here and say, you know, Rob got me that from Celebration, or I got this from Corey. He sent it to me, you know, through the mail or whatever. I like having a story, or I have all my tickets from, or movie stubs from various movies that I've gone to that are up on the wall, different cards. I got your holiday card from last year. So I like surrounding myself with things that make me feel good, make me feel comfortable, but also have a story behind them. You know, every vintage collection or vintage figure has a story behind it to some degree.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. And again, I get that. The same thing with my Burger King tumbler glasses.
Yeah.
Or having, and there's a stigma now, not so much, because the nerd culture is very embraced. But in the summertime, I'll be in my garage, and, you know, I'm a astromech builder. So I'm still building my R2-D2. And anybody getting into that, believe me, it's not a quick one weekend. it's a 2-year thing. And it's all constantly needing upgrades and touch-ups and changing and design stuff and how you're going to build it. And in the summertime, I'll have the garage door open. I'll have some hair 80s metal playing on Spotify. And then I'm literally working on my R2. And all the way down my street, you'll see guys working on their hot rods. They're polishing their motorbikes, doing whatever in their garage. But I bet that those guys don't get the second look that I do. When I got the hood popped open on my R2, and people are walking by going, is that R2-D2? I mean, like, because you expect some guy to be hanging over buried in the hood of his car. You got the little tarp you put on the sides, you know, scratch the fender, but you expect to see that on a Sunday afternoon, but no, you come down my street, you see, oh, there's Rob. Yeah. He's working on his R2. What?
In another 10 years, that's going to be the norm, is that you're going to be walking down and, oh, there's, you know, Rob's building R2, someone's building Chopper, whatever. Yes. And then there'll be some random, what's that guy doing in his car? Just take to the shop, bro.
Yeah, exactly. What are you doing? Like, they sell new ones. What is that? Internal combustion engine? What's the matter with you? Awesome. Okay. Well, that, yeah, again, I wanted to get the clarification, because it's so intriguing to me with collectors. And also too, I've said this before, I'm a completionist. So I have a real hard time picking up that odd piece, because once I pull the string on something, it's over. Like, it's, I gotta finish it. So,
well, that's part of the fun of it sometimes too, right? Is that if you can put up some sort of foundation for yourself saying, okay, I need to complete this, but at the right price. That's how I kind of qualify a lot of my collecting, is that I would consider myself a semi-completionist, but a lot of it is I'm not willing to pay twice, three times above market. If I can get it eventually, you know, that's my end goal, is to have a complete Black Series collection, but I'm not doing it for hundreds and hundreds of dollars more or thousands of dollars more than I need to do it for. So I'm okay sitting and waiting and having a bit of a hole. I know it's there, but at some point I'll go back and try to fill that. And if I can't right at the moment, then I don't. I'm okay with that.
There you go. Okay, moving on. Next question for Tim at the Nerd Room. If you could ask the maker, George Lucas, anything, and just real simple, what would it be?
You know, I had to go back to Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
And it's my favorite original trilogy movie. And I want to know how and where he came up with the Battle of Hoth. You know, I'm sure it's chronicled somewhere, but talking to him directly about that, going from this stark contrast of space to the bright white snow, introducing things like the AT-ATs, the snow speeders, that battle. To me, it was a fantastic way to jump back into this universe and give you something new. They could have easily gone and done a space battle right at the gate, but they took you to snow. They took you and threw tauntauns on your lap. And then all of a sudden you've got the Empire on, like, at their doorstep, Vader. It's just, that is the most thrilling entry, to me at least, of a Star Wars film, because it throws you into the deep end. And I just would want to pick his brain as to why he went there. Clearly it worked, because it's you know, renowned as one of the best Star Wars films, if not the best Star Wars film. But I just have to just know, what drew him to a snow landscape? Was it just the, I'm gonna throw my thumb up at you and say, I can do anything here. You know, we are on the cusp of the technology here, and we're gonna do this because you said, oh, you did it in space because it's dark. Maybe it's as simple as that. But to me, just that battle is almost everything to me in Star Wars.
Yeah, and also, that would be a great question to have to ask the maker. But, and also too, it's not like they're like, oh, we had Tatooine, desert. What's the opposite? Oh, freezing cold instead of super hot. And then it's not like, oh, we're going to have a quote unquote snow land speeder. No, they had tauntauns. Something could, it wasn't like this is the Canadian version of the American stuff, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like slightly tweaked. It's just like, this is a whole new world with whole new vehicles. And of course the, on both sides, Empire and Rebels. And it's just, I agree. It's awesome. It's fantastic. And it's,
yeah. Like, you look at the production of A New Hope and the difficulties it went through. And then he threw himself down a gauntlet and said, I'm going to make it even harder on myself.
Yeah.
You know,
but I'm not going to direct.
Yeah, exactly.
Here, I don't want to be upset.
I'm a kind of semi-direct.
Awesome. I totally agree. And I would. I'm hoping to have a nice, good bank of questions. So if I ever do meet George, I can be like, oh, this is what the Star Wars Commonwealth wants to know. Just real quick, George, if you got a second.
Yeah, if you get a minute, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to do a little bit of word association. You don't have to give one word answers. And they're not going to be the same as what Ash got, because that'd be weird. And him, because I don't want you to comment on her co-host or stuff like that. So I'm going to say something, and you can just describe a little bit about it, and we'll take it from there. First one, Marvel.
Marvel. Captain America is the first thing that comes to mind for me. He's my dude. He's my, from comic books to the films themselves, I got a Captain America wall here. In the Nerd Room. And yeah, I don't know what it is about Captain America. I'm not overly supportive of Americans in general. Probably shouldn't say that, but I guess the American political system, I should qualify that.
Okay.
But there's something about the draw of Captain America. I don't know if it's that altruistic nature of the character, or the way he's portrayed on screen or in comic book, but I've always been drawn to that character for whatever reason.
Well, there's something so, I don't dare I say wholesome. It what to me is, and you know, and I know, and we're not going to get political here, but looking at the political landscape here in the States, and again, we're recording a couple days before their big midterm elections, so we have no idea what's going on. If by the time this is released, if the world's on fire, we don't know, and if we're not commenting on it, it's not because we're ignorant, it just hasn't happened yet. So, but I think I have to agree with you with Captain America. It's everything. We look at the States, especially being so close and being their neighbors, and we love the States and their potential for so what they can do is unlimitless. You know what I mean? And it is limitless, or not unlimitless. It is limitless, but it's amazing. They put a man on the moon. You know, they can do anything. And Captain America represents just everything that's awesome about the States. You mean? So I when I look at that character, I don't see like, well, why aren't you a Captain Canuck fan? You're Canadian. Well, yeah, I read Captain Canuck. Of course I do. But I understand what you're getting at with Captain America. It's
about the fundamentals that he represents,
exactly,
more so than the flag that he wears across his chest for me.
Exactly. Well, yeah, because it's actually a Puerto Rican flag he has on his chest. That's neither here nor there. We're not going to get into splitting hairs. So, next word association, the other side of the coin, DC.
DC. Ooh, that's a tough one. But, you know, I'm just spitting out the first thing that comes to my head, and Batman's the first thing that comes to my head when I hear DC. And the reason that being is going back to Batman 89 in particular, my dad loved that one. For a guy that doesn't like comic book movies,
right,
he was all over Batman 89 for whatever reason. And that eventually led into the 92 Batman the Animated Series for me, which, again, was a focus of mine for, well, I wouldn't say collecting, but as a kid growing up, that was a huge cartoon. I had the action figures, and that was my first real jump into anything comic book related, to be quite honest with you. It wasn't Marvel that drew me initially into this universe. As an adult, it did, and as a pure comic book reader, it did. But as far as my first introduction, it was Batman 89, which is probably a bit too much for the age I was. I think I was five. So probably a bit much, but then the animated series was right in my wheelhouse. And that's really what comes to top of mind is Batman and Batman, the animated series.
Awesome. Yeah. And Batman, I was in high school. I was like a junior in high school when Batman hit. And that hit the world. Like it was unbelievable.
Yeah. So and dark.
It's a little campy when you look back at it. And, you know, we tease each other about the whole Marvel DC thing, and I'm in the Sanjay camp of DC and I'm a staunch supporter, but it's the times too, because for me, like, Marvel could never quite get it right, especially because there was a lot of campy TV shows growing up. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw the Avengers TV show, like, that included the Incredible Hulk from the 70s. The Incredible Hulk TV show was awesome with Marvel, but then if you look online, look for 70s Avengers. Oh, wow. It's something. But at the time, I was comparing it to, I had Christopher Reeve as Superman on the big screen. And then I get Batman 89. And then I get, later on, I get the Dark Knight. You know, like, it's just, it's
incredible.
It's fantastic. Now, granted, Marvel is completely, I've seen Infinity War probably a dozen times already. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it just, what they've done is so fantastic. It's just, and it's great to see both sides doing really, really well, but it's almost like with Marvel doing so well now, us DC fans, like, well, do you remember Superman 2?
Yeah.
Remember Zod? That was cool, right?
Well, and with DC for me, and if you listen to the Nerd Room, I'm probably the biggest critic. You know, Sanjay is a staunch supporter of DC, and Troy is kind of on the fence. He reads a lot of comic books and that. But I would be a stern critic of DC because I hold them, or until they meet the standards of Marvel, because I hold them to the standards of Marvel because I know they're capable of that.
Absolutely.
They produce films like The Dark Knight. Even The Man of Steel is great. Fantastic film. And so I hold them to a much higher standard than what they're producing as far as quality goes right now. And I will continue to criticize them until they match that quality that Marvel's putting out, because I know they're capable. They should not be this far behind in their universe construction.
Yeah. And also, it's like with the last Justice League movie. If it was released and you knew nothing about the DC universe, you'd be like, holy crap, this movie's freaking amazing. Like, this has everything. It's like when we were exposed to the Watchmen movie. Yeah. Not a lot of people knew what the Watchmen were, but everybody got on board because it was an amazing movie. But like you said, because it's DC, and you're like, oh, I get to see Aquaman and Wonder Woman and Flash and it's Superman. Oh, they're all going to be on the big screen. This is going to be fantastic. It's like, the bar is so high going into these things.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, Marvel, they managed to clear the bar. Every time. Like they've had some stinkers. I know, like the first couple Thors, or you mean like but they've waded through the waters and they've managed to find their unbelievable footing, and what they're doing is really cinematic. I mean, history. It's like it's remaking the landscape, literally.
Yeah.
So, I agree with you. I'm a huge DC supporter, but yeah, Batman 89, old school DC, you know, the Christopher Reeve Superman, Dark Knight trilogy, like just they've done it. They just got to do it again.
Yeah. Dark Knight's one of my favorite comic book movies of all time. Like I'll fully openly admit that, even though I'm a full Marvel guy, I even like the Dark Knight Rises. Like they're fantastic films. Like they are trendsetters. They move the needle and force Marvel in a different direction.
Yep. And then you get the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But we're not going to be.
There's your contrast.
Yes. Okay. Moving back to a little bit of Star Wars now. I'm going to shift it back again. Word association. Give me your thoughts. Favorite Star Wars collectible.
Ooh, you know, that's, you're opening up a can of worms there, Rob. You know, for me, I'd have to go back to that vintage Darth Vader carrying case because it holds so much for me. It's the first big vintage piece that I got. It was the reason that I focused so hard on the vintage figures from the 77 Ford and that. And my dad got it for me. You know, like I said before, he's not a Star Wars collector or whatever, but the fact that he put the effort in to get that for me, it means a lot. It's like I said, having a connection to my collection itself is very important to me. And that piece in particular holds quite a bit of weight. And then on the Marvel side of things, I got to go to my Avengers number one.
That was my next question. I was going to ask your favorite overall collectible item. And I see it over your shoulder. And I know the story because we've talked about it a few times, even on air and off air. But for the spotlight, we need to hear your Avengers number one story.
Yeah. Okay. So I got married back in 2013. And, you know, as per usual, the husband and wife exchanged gifts and all that on the day of. So I got my wife a diamond necklace. And, you know, I guess more common than not, it's exchange of some sort of jewelry, something that you put on for the wedding day that has engravings or whatever on it. And my wife, knowing who I was, you know, she had known who I was for years and years and years. She gives me a slabbed Avengers number one comic book. And I remember getting this and being and saying to myself, like, who am I marrying? First of all, and it's always just been something that really warms me because I'm not a big jewelry guy or anything like that. And this is her through our whole relationship before we got married into when we got married, is she's always been my biggest supporter when it comes to collecting. You know, she's always been, it's okay to spend the money. To be honest with you, the most expensive stuff I have in this room, she's purchased for me.
How fantastic.
Funny or not. So it's that Avengers number one, though, my wedding day, it being kind of and representing something so significant to me. You know, it was a year after the original Avengers came out, the film. I was deep into the comic books. And just having this as a piece for her to express that and say, look, you know, I know who you are. I know what you love. Here's something that you would have never bought yourself in a million years because of the price.
Of course, yeah.
And it's just so great. And Sanjay is actually the one that helped her buy it because she had contacted him and said, you know, how do I buy this? Where do I buy? How to make sure it's real? What kind of grade should I get? And so it's a lower grade, but I love that about it. I don't need a 9 Avengers number one. I love it. It's a 4.5. And I think I love it more because it's worn, it's beat up. It has a history to it. And
yeah. Well, explain to our listeners, to those not in the know, a slab. Explain what's the difference between buying a slab and then buying something that's...
Yeah, so a slab is so usually it's CGC grading. So that's a comic grading system that's used. And a slab is this very thick plastic that they're archiving the book. So it doesn't get any air. It doesn't feel acidity from other pieces of paper or whatever. And what they do is you'll send it away. They'll slab it up. They'll put in this plastic. It's basically seal it off from any exposure to whatever. And they send it back to you. And in the process, they grade it. So there's this grading system that goes from 0 to 9 or 0 to 10. It's like a perfect mint comic. You'll never get a perfect mint comic. But that also controls the price. So something at about a 4 will have rips, tears in it. The pages will be yellowed. There won't be the whole idea of it being this pristine comic book. And then the 9 is your off the shelf, you know, no folds in the papers or anything like that.
Yeah. And also too, if you go to your comic book store now and you buy a comic right off the shelf, there's a 99.9% chance it's not a 10. Like,
oh, yeah, never.
Even if you're waiting at the factory and watching it come off the line, because it may be off-centered slightly. There might be something in the printing. Like, it is, it's like hockey cards or baseball cards. It's almost impossible to have a perfect 10. So, okay, well, we got that clarification for our listeners. And so your slabbed Avengers. I love that story. And that's what I was getting to it, because I knew, I was kind of softballing the questions. I knew the answer already, but I mean, I just wanted the roundtable listeners to hear that story, because it's awesome. And with wedding gifts, it is something I'm sure your wife wouldn't run out and buy herself a diamond necklace. Like, just
No.
It's just, that's, those gifts are like, are fantastic. Cause yeah, you mean, yeah, they're a little pricey, but at the same time, you know what? This, yeah, you wouldn't go buy yourself this.
And it's the connection to it, right? It's like any piece of jewelry or whatever, something. It's, there's a massive story behind it. And I remember the funniest part about that is that she gave it to my best man to hold for the evening.
Right.
She, like, locked it in a cupboard. He was terrified that he was going to use it.
Now he's got to hold the rings and this great Avengers number one. Oh, come on. Like,
it was so funny. He handed it off to me and he just, like, breathed a sigh of relief. It's your responsibility now.
Yes. Fantastic. All right. Just a couple more things real quick. We're going to do more of this word association. What is your favorite single comic book issue? Could be Star Wars, Marvel, DC. I'm assuming it's DC, but we'll just let you say it. And not the one not the one from your wife, not the gift, but what that you've read. Do you have, and I'm talking like Dark Knight or Spider-Man, The Confession, where he confesses to Mary Jane. What's your number one favorite comic issue?
Ever? Oh, that's a heck of a question, man. It's a loaded question as
it
well.
Is.
It's, you know, I often will side a bit with that Vader run we've been reviewing on TSW Comics. That issue number 5 is the one that sticks out right away to me.
Yes.
It's not something that I would consider as far as comic book reading in my life.
Of course.
But holy man, it's a good issue.
It is. And that's what the question, like I said, I'm sure, like, your favorite comic is obviously the one your wife gave you, the Avengers number one.
Yes.
But it's not the best comic in the world.
Like, no. That one for me, it was a game changer when it comes to Star Wars comics. You know, we've read through the last couple of years of what they're doing, what they're producing. And that for me is a big stick out, probably more recently. But going back to the Marvel side of things, I got to go back, and I've just reread it with Marvel Unlimited, is the Captain America Brubaker run for 2004 through 2006 or so. It is to me, it's the defining comic book of Captain America in the modern age. And it's issues 1 through, I think, 8, with number 4 being, I think, the big one, because it introduces the Winter Soldier. It's Captain America, a modernized Captain America. And it really sets the tone for what you see in the films. It's Winter Soldier tone. It's even Civil War. The tone that they pull from that is directly related to Brubaker's run. But yeah, so that really, for me at least, that's really given us the movie iteration of Captain America. And because I love the Winter Soldier so much as a film, going back to that comic book and having read it before, it is fairly significant. And I guess the last one I'll do here, because I'm ringing them through in my head, is 2006. If you go back to, it's what's called Annihilation. So this is even potentially the rumored title for Avengers 4 right now, is Avengers Annihilation. But there's an event, a cosmic event, that I'm always banging on about, saying, you got to go read this. It is what really set for the path for Guardians of the Galaxy as we know them now in the films. And it was this event that was set completely outside of the Marvel Earth-based proper comic book, the 616. It's in the 616 universe,
right?
But it's not focused on those characters. What it's focused around is the cosmic end and building up that universe, getting it away from that wild Jim Starlin type of writing and the way it's pictured and drawn, and getting it a bit more grounded, but giving you that almost Star Wars vibe to the Marvel cosmic universe. And it's it's a thrilling event. And that eventually leads you into Guardians of the Galaxy 2008, which is the initial run, which is what we see depicted on the screens today. So for me, Annihilation, Brubaker run of Captain America, and the Vader series right now.
Yeah, and I know we bang on about that Vader series on our show, if people don't listen, if you're not into comics, but it's, to put it just, that one issue was Vader number 4, I believe, 4 or 5. Yeah, that one issue, we get an entire 6 movies about Darth Vader. Like that whole, the original, the OT and the prequels are literally about Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader. And it gives you even more in just a few pages, in some panels. And it's fantastic. So again, people that don't listen to our regular show, people that do, yes, you've heard this before, but please go out, check out the first 5 issues of the current Vader run. It's outstanding. 2 more real quick ones.
Yes.
What are you looking forward to most at Celebration? And no, you don't say meeting me.
Of course, meeting you in person.
We'll leave out the obvious, but...
You know, for me, it's getting just embroiled in fandom, in the culture, and sharing that with the people that I love. Like, you know, I say love, I've never met half the people that we're going to be experiencing things with, but the fact that we've found this great group in the Star Wars Commonwealth and we can go and share this passion with and just spend 4 or 5 days in an atmosphere that is purely Star Wars, you know, away from judgment, away from even the toxicity that is the internet. Everyone that's going to be there is going to be happy. No matter what's revealed, people are going to be yelling and cheering and talking about it. Going to the pub or going to a restaurant after, everyone in there is going to be talking Star Wars. And it feels like it's just going to be this atmosphere and this environment that is very welcoming to embracing your passion, your hobby, your love, whatever. And to me, that's what I'm most excited for, is just sitting down and just in awe, looking around at the Funko booth and Hasbro and going to panels and just experiencing it. Because I've never been to a Celebration. I've never been to a proper Star Wars convention. So this is going to be my first jump into that. And then we just threw in the podcast application.
We did, yeah.
For the podcast stage at Celebration. So fingers crossed, we should find out actually around when this drops or not too long after, if we actually get it. So that would be really cool as well, is just being able to podcast that Celebration with the entirety of the Star Wars Commonwealth. Unbelievable.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait. I'm going to send along just on behalf of the Commonwealth. You did up the application and you did the yeoman's work as far as getting that off to Celebration, and we really appreciate it. And again, fingers crossed, we look forward to it. And I can't wait to see you as a collector walk the floor. I'll be in tears laughing half the time. Like, just we'll be needing wheelbarrow for your jaw.
Yep.
And we're also going to need a special protective case for your credit cards, because they're going to be very warm, my friend.
I'm going to have to give them to you. Just say, only give them to me when I feel, or when you feel, this is the right move.
Yes. Yeah, well, maybe just bring one card with just your limit. Like, if you're only spending so much, that's what you're spending. You're running out.
Like one of those gift cards that say, Tim, you only have this amount of money to spend.
Exactly. This is it. Yeah, because it can get out of hand. It can. Like,
it probably will. Let's be honest with each other.
All right. Well. Okay, one last thing I'm going to ask you, and I asked Ash the same question about her co-host, Troy and Sanjay. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that you guys have such an awesome show. I know people can't see it on the podcast, but your diversity on the show is inspiring. And it's not done as if you guys are genuine friends and from all walks of life. And you found this common ground, and it's fantastic to hear you guys. Your friendship on the podcast really sticks out. And you didn't go into podcasting going, oh, we're going to start ticking boxes on who we need and no. Get all the bases. Your friendship is genuine, and it's inspiring, and it's awesome. And if you can just elaborate a little bit on that, like Troy and Sanjay.
Yeah, you know, my dudes, Troy and Sanjay, you know, it's a really funny story how we met, because we didn't meet until about 5 years ago or so. So we're not lifelong friends or anything like that. But, you know, at this point, I feel like they are, like I have been. I met Sanjay through another friend that said, hey, you both like comic books. We're at a pub or whatever. You both like comic books. Talk. And him and I sat in a corner and talked all night. And then we had this weird, awkward texting thing. We didn't really know each other, but we were texting back and forth. So
it's kind of like, it wasn't one of these late night you up. No, it's not like that.
It might have been. And so him and I started, we called it the walk to the comic shop. And every Wednesday at lunchtime, we'd leave work and we'd walk across the river in Calgary here and go to our local comic book shop together. And we'd pick up comic books. We had this nice little debate that we always even that's maintained on the podcast with Star Wars versus our Star Wars DC versus Marvel. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And eventually his cousin actually had started a podcast, a hockey podcast.
Okay.
And he said, I think I want to start up a podcast. So he started up one just doing him on his own. He bought a mic and all that. And then he eventually said, it's called, I think 1912 Entertainment or something like that. And so he started doing just talking through random things, hockey and that. And then he said, I kind of want to do a comic book one. Do you maybe want to start this? And I said, sure. So we kicked it out. We named it the Nerd Room because the idea behind it is that you want, or everyone has their nerd room, whether you call it that or not. And it's kind of this common ground that everyone wants or has something very similar to that.
Well, everybody nerds out about something, whether it be hockey, baseball.
Exactly. Marvel, everyone has their space. And it was a bit inspired, funny enough, by Linkin Park, the band from the 90s. Yeah, it makes total sense, right? But the idea behind their band or their name, or at least in part, was that there's a Linkin Park almost in every city in America. So no matter where they went, they felt like they had a home. There was a place that they could relate to. And that's the base idea behind the Nerd Room, is that everyone can relate to the idea that they have their own space. You can call it whatever you want, but it's your space. And that's the idea behind it. And so we called it that. And we actually posted the first few episodes onto his other feed. And then we sat back and we said, okay, maybe we want to try something just completely nerd focused. So we switched those episodes over to its own feed. We did all the uploading to iTunes and all that. And we did, I think, the first four or five episodes together. And then I had met Troy through my wife, actually. We had just both had little babies, and they met through another friend at just a mom and baby playdate type thing. And very similarly, our wives were talking, and I think my wife was over at her house and saw a comic book on the wall. And she said, oh, my husband liked comic books too. And then there was like, here, go into a corner and talk. And so, and then from then on, Troy and I have been, you can barely separate us. So I met both of these guys through a shared passion of comic books, and Troy more so with Star Wars. And I invited Troy onto the podcast because Sanjay was going to be away. And so he did one with me, just him and I. And then the next episode, I said, do you want to come do this permanently? So we have three hosts. And he was like, sure. So he met Sanjay through me, and it's been there ever since. Almost every Wednesday for the past 3 years, we've met up and talked nerd, talked Star Wars, Marvel, and DC. And now we're growing our families together. You know, our little kids are friends. We do barbecues once in a while. We're all three of us are having babies now again.
Yeah, all around the same time, suspiciously. Yeah, but again, we're not getting into that.
That's for another day.
Yeah, that's for a Roman potting cast. We'll talk about
that. Exactly. But it's become this wonderful accident almost that we were able to meet. And the commonality is nerd. And now we have this great community we're involved with the Stars Commonwealth. And it's funny, I talk to, between Troy and Sanjay and you guys in the Stars Commonwealth, I talk to you more than my friends that I've known my whole life or that I've known since university or whatever, because we have this shared passion. And it's great sharing something for that. All we ever want, and the three of us, all we ever wanted out of all this was an excuse to sit down and talk about nerd. You know, in the absence of the podcast, yeah, we'd have text and all that, but it's really hard to make time unless you've scheduled it. So saying, oh, we'll just go to the pub, have a few beers and talk,
never happens. Yeah,
it'll never happen. It may happen once every 6 months, but this is something that everyone in our families are on board with. We sit down, we lock ourselves in here for 2 hours on every Wednesday, and we just go to town talking.
Yeah, it's like a buddy's getting together for a bowling night or whatever. Exactly. Or playing darts or billiards, whatever you're doing. Like, yeah, this is your thing. Yeah, and it really shows up in the podcast. Like, you can really tell. It's fantastic.
I appreciate that.
So, okay, real quick, we're going to put a button on this and end our Nerd Room spotlight on TSW Roundtable. So, real quick, where can people find the Nerd Room and you if they want to talk to Tim?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. That's usually where I hang out. I don't do Facebook or anything like that too much, but you can find me at TheNerdRM. That's my handle over on Twitter. And you can find everything that we do as a podcast over on TheNerdRoom.net and also on StarsCommonwealth.com. And there you can also find all the other 9, including, well, 10, including us, different podcasts that are doing various different things, different voices in the communities. You can find everything that everyone does there, including the TSW Comics that Robin and I do, as well as TSW Roundtable, and everything's being done at Talk Stores as well.
Awesome. Okay. And real quick, you can find myself. I'm at Robert MM Cast on Twitter and Cast1973 on Instagram. Aside from the show, like Tim mentioned, we do TSW Comics once a month where we take a look inside the pages of the Star Wars comics, as it were. And of course, I have my weekly comedy show with my good buddy Roman. It's called the Roman Potting Cast. If you're into very lowbrow humor and you have time in your car with no kids in the car, please, please, no kids. Check us out. I mean, if you mean kind of like a Rob Wade's Crazy Train.
But yeah, it's not. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it's a little different. But hey, if you're in for a giggle, come visit us over there at the Roman Podcast. So until next time on the TSW Roundtable, I'm Rob Cast.
I'm Tim.
And we'll see you next time. Later.